It is August 1st, 2017, and we haven't done a podcast in a very long time, have we, Jack?
Well, it's 2 months, so let's just consider this our What Happened in June and July podcast, and then we can look ahead towards, 4 weeks away from VMworld?
Yeah, man, time flies. It is conference season is in full swing, I guess, although there's light at the end of the tunnel. So this is Gabe Knuth from Omaha, Nebraska, and we've already heard from Jack. And Jack, you're in San Francisco today, right?
That's correct.
This is our wrap-up for the last couple of months podcast. In our show notes here, it's literally, what has happened since Synergy? We just kind of want to discuss some stuff and see where the conversation takes us. And a lot has happened. And, you know, we can also take a bit of a look ahead towards VMworld.
Yeah, so of course, first on our list, since like we said, our last podcast was from Synergy. In the meantime, Citrix has a new CEO.
We wrote a long article about this. Kirill Tatarinov is not at Citrix as the CEO anymore. He was, they pitched this as a mutual decision. I don't know how mutual it was. But Citrix has promoted from within, and David Henschel is now the CEO of Citrix. And basically what they've done is they've replaced a guy with a development and product-focused background with a finance guy. And that may or may not be a good thing. I don't know if you've spoken to anybody within Citrix about this since it happened, Jack. I've spoken with a few folks, and they, for the most part, aren't too worried about this, mainly because Henschel has been at Citrix for many years now, and so he actually knows Citrix and how Citrix works, and you know what butters their bread, so to speak. And so it's not as huge of a shift as you might think. I still think we've got a bean counter at the helm, and so there may be some more cuts coming and things like that, but it's not like they brought in somebody else who's known for stripping companies lean and selling them off. They promoted a person from the Citrix family into the CEO position. And one other thing here, as I've also heard that there was a lot of time there were times when it appeared to the people that I've talked to that Kirill just didn't get what Citrix was doing, or that he was constantly butting heads with people in regards to what Citrix was doing, what the future of Citrix should be versus what Citrix was good at doing and things like that. And so it could be that there was just a philosophical dispute over what the future of the company is going to be. So that could be, but as we've seen these other situations play out where, you know, boards are taken over by investors and companies are selling off products, and it looks like it, and then we hear rumors that Citrix is being sold and things like that. I suspect that it's not as simple as we just didn't get along with the board.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking we have a long way to go before Synergy 2018, and a couple of things I'm wondering is, like, what are we going to think of as Kirill's legacy? Because we did see the big renewal of the Microsoft partnership and that relationship. And, of course, we did see the big streamlining and divestitures of GoToMeeting and all that. So, and, you know, I think we can all agree that those were a lot of positive steps that happened under him, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And perhaps those things were in the works already anyway, and that wasn't really Tatarinov's doing. And, you know, we don't even want to pretend to know what the inner workings are over there. But when we just look at what we do know, you know, when they hired Kirill as the CEO, they had said that, you know, this was a long, thorough review of candidates. I'm reading the quote now. The board determined that Kirill's strong product management background and excessive technology leadership experience make him the right person to oversee Citrix's innovation and growth strategy. And so they valued those qualities in a CEO candidate. And now the CEO of Citrix does not have those qualities, he was the CFO of Citrix, which carries with it a different set of qualities. And while they may be valuable as a CEO, they're not the same ones that they apparently prioritized before. And so that's what that I think is the most notable shift in all of this. And again, I don't want to pretend to know any more information than, you know, I wrote in the article or anything like that. It just seems to me like a shift in strategy. And this sort of coincides with rumors that Citrix is up for sale. And so there are situations that you could invent that may or may not be true that, you know, would say like, well, there was this company that maybe wanted to buy Citrix, but they had too many of these things going on. And so, you know, if you want us to acquire you, you have to make these changes. And if one CEO is unwilling to make those changes, another one could. And that kind of thing has happened before. And again, I'm not trying to say that this is happening at Citrix, but that's certainly a scenario that could play out amidst these rumors that Citrix is for sale. And so there's a whole lot of speculation going on here. I'm not trying to be alarmist. I really hate FUD. But clearly something's up. And so that's, you know, I wrote all this stuff out in the article. It was called Kirill Tatarinov is out as Citrix CEO. CFO David Henshall takes over. And, you know, I think for now, we'll just wait and see what happens. And really, as far as I know, nothing's really happened since then. So nothing monumental has happened.
And it's only been 2 months since Synergy happened. So, of course, in our last podcast, we were talking about all the product announcements and the directions with the Citrix Analytics Service and things like that. And it's still way early. I guess it's just that so much has been happening that we're really curious what's next. But we really do have to be patient and remember that it's only been 2 months. So, like, let's.
And it's only been 20 days since this move happened, since they changed CEOs. Because I think, I don't recall exactly. I think it was, maybe it's, no, this was published on July 11th, and it is July 31st that we're recording this, and we're going to publish it for August 1st. So, yeah, it's been 20 or 21 days here since that happened. And so it's not a lot of time. You know what'll be interesting to me is to see if the vision laid out at Synergy was Kirill's vision or whether it was Citrix's vision. Like, are we actually going to see Citrix Analytics Service next year, or is that going to be, now that Kirill's not there, is that going to kind of fall by the wayside or not?
Exactly. That was my thoughts as well. And I guess to put a bow on this, I guess we really just have to be patient on this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, I'm pulling for Citrix. Citrix means a lot to me. I've been around for a long time, and most of it has been doing something with, you know, in or around Citrix and things like that. So in no way am I trying to like root against the company or, you know, try to shame them or make people not like Citrix or that kind of a thing. You know, I'm always pulling for them. So hopefully things work out in the end, I guess, is the best way to wrap that up.
Well, so to move on to the next topic, an interesting announcement came just like a week or two after that. So that was the renewed or strengthened partnership between Citrix and Google Cloud. Now, a few things that I'll mention about this is that, of course, it's been a while that there have been partnerships that are obviously, hey, virtual desktops and from Citrix or even other desktop virtualization providers, as the other announcements have gone. They obviously make a great combination with Chromebooks, and that's a very, you know, straightforward partnership that that we had heard for years. But now it sounds like the partnership is going to be deeper for Citrix on Google Cloud. And Gabe, I want you to fill me in on what you've found about the details about that so far, but I wanted to mention some of the background. So back in, was it March or April? Earlier this year, Google had their big Google Cloud Next conference, which was, it's, you know, Google Cloud Compute or Google Compute Platform. Well, one of those acronyms. It's G Suite. It's all of the enterprise-facing stuff. And all of this enterprise-facing Google Cloud stuff all comes up under Diane Greene. So just think about think about where they could be going with this. I mean, she can go into customers and say, hey, remember 10 and 15 years ago when we when a company that I led transformed your world with server virtualization? Well, just imagine how many doors that opens up, that whole Google Cloud being led by Diane Greene.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that carries a lot of weight with it, for sure. You know, I think, you know, at that show, they really started talking about their enterprise focus, and I think that this is just the next thing in line from Google for that. You know, how many companies that you talk to, I mean, and you're probably not talking to them about the same things I am, but how many companies that you talk to mention Google Cloud as their platform as a service provider?
Well,
is their public cloud provider?
Okay, I was going to say, because I live in San Francisco and talked to a lot of startups.
Yeah.
so I talked to lots of people that they talk about being G Suite users, but as far as the platform, that's fewer conversations.
Right, and that's, you know, almost everybody that I speak to, it's Azure, AWS, and so Google. Maybe companies are using Gmail or G Suite and that, but I feel like Google Cloud, is there a name for it? Google Enterprise Cloud? Even I don't know. See? so I feel like that hasn't gotten as much run in enterprise circles. It would in smaller, you know, startup San Francisco world, but, you know, try going to, you know, any one of the Fortune 500 companies that have been in business forever and see what public clouds they're using. And I don't think Google comes up as often.
And
so go ahead.
And if anything today, of course, the buzz for all of them is Azure, Azure, Azure.
Yeah, exactly. And all the buzz Azure's been getting. I mean, even AWS seems like they're in second place in the buzz or in the hype machine right now. So I think that this, from a Google perspective, I think that this announcement is, or this partnership, I guess, is really great for increasing enterprise awareness and acceptance. Because even if people are aware of Google and starting to use the Google Cloud, even if it isn't for the platform stuff, even if it's just leveraging other Google services, if companies have been reluctant to do that so far because it only gets them partway there because they still have all these Windows applications they have to worry about, being able to also put your Windows applications in Google's cloud as well makes this a lot more appealing. And the fact that they're going to integrate G Suite with ShareFile and some of the other announcements that they made, I think all of that is exactly what they needed to appeal to sort of the old guard side of IT.
Exactly. And you know what this got me thinking about is so Windows applications in the cloud, if we can use this as a pivot point, I wrote an article earlier in July called "Just Wait, the mobile space is going to rediscover VDI and DAS." And basically, the premise was that the space that they may not usually be desktop app people, but they say, "Hey, check out we check out all the great things that mobility in the cloud have done for end-user computing. Well, how do we apply those mobility and cloud benefits to all of our old desktop applications?" And of course, the answer is some type of VDI and DAS. And so I kind of jokingly put that because, you know, for years we've always gotten these product pitches from smaller, newer startups that are sort of pitching VDI. And I guess it's mostly amusing to us because we've been following desktop virtualization, but we get these pitches that are like, it's like having your entire computer in the cloud, and we laugh. We're like, yeah, we've heard of desktop virtualization before.
I mean, that happened most recently with OnLive. I think was probably the biggest hype demo that we got that was like, yeah, we've been seeing this demo for 20 years, but I think there's been some other smaller ones in the meantime. But yeah, I think you're right. As long as there's Windows apps, there's going to be the requirement to deliver those Windows apps to whatever devices people happen to be using. And so there is a very, very long, not at all sexy tail to desktop virtualization. So it's going to be that thing that we just have to do, you know, for the next 20 years.
And of course,
but it's, you know, the need will still be there.
These are, and of course, these are conversations and articles that we've been writing. I mean, we can go back probably like at least five, maybe even longer years saying, okay, the future of all these Windows applications is somewhere in the data center. And I don't know what it is about the summer of 2017, but I've been having that conversation a lot again. And I don't know what's different now. I don't know whether it's the yet more changes to Microsoft licensing, or Gabe, maybe it's some of the latest crop of DAS providers coming up, or if it's conversations around unified endpoint management. We've been having a lot of those. I don't know what it is, but again, it's this thought of, when I look at unified endpoint management, especially MDM for Windows, and I look at DAS, again, since even though we've been having this conversation for as long as I've been writing for BrianMadden.com, I think to myself, like, yeah, in 5 years or in 8 years, like, of course, that's 100% how it's going to be. Any of the laptops will be managed just with MDM, and all of our Windows applications will be remote. I mean, like, 5 years from now, or let's be even more conservative, like 10 years from now, is there really any reason why anybody wants to install a Windows app locally on a desktop?
Oh, there will be a million reasons why. But, you know, that might not be the prevailing way of doing it, but there will still be all sorts of little niche fringe use cases.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. But no, I understand what you're saying. What's funny, I keep, as you're saying, you keep hearing these things. This feels like, you know, when you were like five and your grandpa could pull a quarter out from behind your ear and you thought it was the coolest trick ever. And then by the time you're like eight or nine, you learned that trick, but he still did it. And then, you know, you were like 12 or 13 and he still wanted to do it. And you're like, grandpa, I know this trick. The penny's, you know, on the other side of your fingers right now. Like, that's what it is this time. Like, hey guys, you want to come have this briefing for this super cool thing that we're doing? And when you get there and you like take the covers off of it, you realize, oh yeah, this is just desktop virtualization. I think the reason that we're going to see that kind of thing pick up is this technology is so much easier to do now. And so it's not that much of a stretch for a company that, say, does enterprise mobility to whip up and bolt on a good enough desktop virtualization element as well to deploy Windows or to, you know, remote Windows applications to the endpoints too. I feel like there's probably an RMAD kind of play in there too.
Absolutely.
Like powwow. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see where all that fits in. I mean, powwow's still around. I see little releases from them coming around all the time. And so I still think there's a big place in the industry for something like that. But, you know, it may be a few years down the line before that picks up popularity. And again, it's not, you know, they have wisely powwowed it. I'm talking about, they've wisely shifted focus from just remoting Windows applications or refactoring Windows applications, which is a word they hate to use, to creating mobile application workflows, which is kind of why they belong in that RMAD category now. Because I think that's probably what it's going to end up being. We're going to have to draw from Windows for a little bit of this thing that we need to do, of this workflow that we need to do, but we can also draw on these other applications too, and we need something to tie them all together, and that's what powwow is going to be. So there are a lot of different combinations of technology that we're going to go through in the next, you know, 10 or 15 years probably. And so it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I think what you're saying here, you know, the resurgence of desktop virtualization, but coming from the mobility side, I think that's just as likely as anything to, you know, I don't think it's going to take over, but I think it'll, you know, it'll get some run in the near future too.
Right. And some of the other reasons why this conversation of summer of 2017 is still sticking, is still being quite prominent, is that I'm still, it's been what, about 2 years now since we really first started talking about the idea of managing Windows 10 with MDM. I think it was a little bit longer before that that we knew that it would be technically possible. But like I remember back at BriForum in 2016 having a lot of conversations about managing Windows with MDM, and we're still having that conversation today. And of course, we know that it's going to be a very long path to get there. But just the fact that people are still kind of excited about it, even though it's something that is going to take so long. Because look, we just had that conversation with PolicyPack a few weeks ago. You just wrote about unified endpoint management and what we're going to hear at VMworld, and some of the VMware folks responded to that article on Twitter saying, "Hey, just hold tight. There is going to be a lot of there's going to be more information about unified endpoint management."
Yeah, to be clear, I speculated about what we might hear, because I don't know what we're going to hear yet. But yeah, that's why they responded on Twitter with "hold tight." You know, there will be stuff. So that's good. That means I wasn't entirely wrong. Because if I was, they would have just said, "You're so wrong, and here's why."
Well, so I guess it's just interesting to me that this is such a long-term thing, yet there's still so much talk about it and excitement about it. In that 2 years, we've seen other trends come and go, and you know, we've seen things die out, come and go faster than that.
The accelerated hype cycle. So I think with this one, if you look at all the different tasks that we as admins have to do to manage all of our devices, it's a disaster right now. There are so many different things that we have to use to manage all these devices, and none of them are compatible. The only time that any of the processes that we use to manage these things come together is like the form that we fill out when we bring in a new employee or something, you know, and after that, it's just a scattered out lump of management consoles and other little sub processes to get it going. So the need to change and kind of standardize on one overall management platform, I think everybody identifies that we need that. Even the most hardcore traditional PC management people that I've talked to are not scoffing at unified endpoint management. None of them want to do it now, but they all recognize, because again, these are 20-year-old veterans, so they've seen lots of things come and go. they recognize it, like, okay, this is early, but there's something here. Microsoft is focused on this too, so this isn't just VMware telling me I should use their stuff to manage all these devices, or it's not just Citrix telling me I should do this, or MobileIron. This is something that Microsoft has invested in as well. And so now it's just taking the wait and see approach, because as we've written and spoke, you know, talked about before, there's a pretty big gap that needs to be closed before we can get the same capabilities we have today with traditional domain-based, group policy-based, system or config manager-based management compared to unified endpoint management. But if every year that goes by from now and, you know, throughout the next several years shows marked gains in capabilities for UEM, then yeah, I could see it catching on, you know, as time goes by. You know, the least complicated environments are the ones that are going to be able to use it first. But like I said, the more that we can do to kind of bridge that gap, the better. And the more that is done, the faster this will catch on. And I think it will catch on. I don't see too many people dragging their feet or pushing back on it.
And there are a lot of philosophical conversations that you could have that maybe this is getting a little bit too esoteric about. Well, like maybe for some devices, we should just like rip the Band-Aid off and say, okay, if you need any Windows desktop apps, they're going to be remote, and we're going to treat this Windows 10 device just like we would a Mac or a Chromebook, or basically any other device where you can't locally install Windows devices. So again, a lot of subtlety. Maybe you want to do it that like extreme approach. But try this on for size. So for those of you listening, I haven't mentioned this idea to Gabe yet, but over the last week,
Oh, good.
This idea became clear that really my next laptop, I'm declaring it now. I've just started writing an article version of this that I'll publish in the next two weeks.
Don't say it.
Oh, I think I am. So Windows 10S on Qualcomm.
Oh, crap. I thought you were going to say iPad Pro. All right. go for it, man. I don't care. Whatever.
Well, so
No, it's at least it's a laptop. It's not. It's still Windows. You're not pretending it's something it's not. Like, I realize you're not going to be able to install Windows apps on it, but your use case is different than mine. And so, you know, my alter ego is making custom pinball machines that requires me to install this crazy complex framework of back-end Python garbage. So, like, there's no way I'm using Windows 10S, right? And, like, you know, I have to be able to compile my own drivers for some of the hardware that we're using and things. So I'm not a candidate for that kind of thing. But your use case, I mean, yeah, why not? I have no problem with this at all. It's if you were going to say I'm going to use an iPad Pro, that's when I'm like, I probably would have said, damn it, Jack, why didn't you just go buy a Windows 10S machine?
Well, so about that iPad Pro.
Did you buy one?
No, I have not. But there's also another conversation there to have about, like, what we really mean by productivity. You can't see on the radio, but I'm making air quotes right now. And iOS 11, so of course announced in June, it'll come out in September. This, of course, is the version of iOS that has, you know, every version has had a few more multitasking features. With iOS 11, you can actually have like three apps up at once, and there's the drag and drop and all that sorts of stuff. This is the one that's obviously supposed to have been the largest leap in getting laptop-like productivity out of an iPad. So I think I have like two devices on my wish list. And of course, the iPad Pro, like, actually is out and exists now, and I can get the public beta of iOS 11. Whereas we know some of the manufacturers for the Qualcomm-based Windows 10S devices. And of course, I want to do the Qualcomm-based because why not? And those are going to have the cool features like a built-in eSIM, and you just like buy your data plan directly from the settings menu. But back to the iPad Pro, like I said, I've always been a use the best fitting tool for the job thing. And so that means that I've always done my typing on a real laptop instead of an iPad. But I think it might be time to give it a try.
I mean, if it's just from a curiosity standpoint, I've taken way further leaps than that, right? You know, Android on a stick kind of stuff. One time I bought a Logitech, I don't remember the name of it, a Logitech Review? I don't know. It was a Google TV device, not a Chromecast, like 2 years before that. That it just ran Android and came with a little keyboard that you use as your remote control for the television. Just to see if I could turn it into a thin client. I could. It sucked. And I got rid of that thing pretty quickly. But, you know, in the quest to find the perfect thin client, I've bought a lot of really shitty devices. but so in this case, though, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're getting it to satisfy some curiosity, that's fine. See if you can rent one instead of buying one.
And I'm not completely a glutton for punishments. You know, I like you saw my review of the HP Elite X3 Nirvana phone, and I have that Samsung Galaxy 8 that's I carried around in my backpack, and I swear I'm going to be writing a review of the Nirvana phone type features of that soon. I'm not declaring that I'm going to live off of just my phone for 6 months or anything like that.
Your brother would have. That's the kind of thing Brian would have done.
And then how many he would have declared. Six.
And then you would have told him he can't do it. And then he would have done it anyway, even though we had to work harder.
Yeah. That's another topic. So we can talk about Brian's usage of I don't know if we ever did a podcast. We should do this sometime where he swore off smartphones, but now he carries his iPad Mini with him everywhere he goes with LTE connectivity.
Somehow he justifies that.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy, it's not an iPad Mini. It's an iPad. It's a 10 inch. So and I'm like, tell me how that's different.
Exactly.
So. we kid, but we love him.
So for all these,
I thought about having him on a podcast as a guest sometime, but he would have anything like he has been legitimately checked out of this space since, actually, it's been about a year now.
Yep.
Actually, it is a year exactly now. So happy 1 year retirement anniversary, Brian. But yeah, he hasn't done a thing. What he knows is what you and I have sent him.
Yeah, exactly. But so for this conversation to wrap it up, I think this emphasizes that all of the conversations at conferences that I've had so far this summer, and again coming up at VMworld, one of the things is we've all said, like, we're not geeking out on, like, which device has the most power or which has the best screen, but even from a general EUC perspective, this year has been the most interesting year for gadgets and devices, like, since the introduction of the iPad, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things out there, and there's a lot of things looking for uses, but I guess that's how you learn, right? You throw some stuff out there and see if it catches on at all, or see if the use cases change a little bit to try to make them work, and then, you know, sometimes you meet in the middle, and so we'll see what to do, or, you know, how things shake out. But I'm supportive of you getting a Windows 10 S on Qualcomm device, so go for it. Would love to see how that works out. To be fair, so I have here a Dell Latitude XPS 14, I think it is. It's Windows 10 touchscreen. I think it's last year's model, and it is fantastic. I love it. The biggest two complaints I have is that the model that I have is 8 gigs of memory, and so not great for running virtual machines and stuff. And two, and I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but it doesn't have iMessages, and that's a real pain in the neck. And so, because that's all of us communicate that way, and when somebody like you breaks the breaks the mold a little bit, now we're gonna have to go do what, like WhatsApp or something, Snapchat, or you'll just have to use your phone. But that honestly, that's the only reason. That's the biggest reason that I haven't gravitated towards Windows 10, because I'm not really married to the Mac. I'm married to a laptop form factor, but I'm not really married to the Mac so much as I am the workflow that I have. And so, you know, we'll actually, if you do that, maybe that'll kind of spur me along to kind of see what the next step is for us as well, you know, for my overall workflow.
Then that opens
really
up.
Really, Jack, I'm just getting old and set my ways. Like, I'm 38 now. I just kind of want to keep doing what I've been doing. I need somebody to shake me up.
Well, then that opens up more options for phones. And anyway, so the next topic that I had that I've been thinking about a lot this summer, so machine learning. And man, am I surprised that we have not seen the machine learning hype backlash yet.
You know, it still just sounds so Skynet cool that I think people are still on with it. The thing that people don't realize about machine learning and AI, while we're at it, is that we've always had it to some degree. It's just that today our ability to ingest and compute these huge amounts of data has gotten to the point where the stuff that we can do is impressive to just about anybody, right? So, you know, it 5 years ago, it would have been mind-blowing to us. And now, you know, present day, it's mind-blowing to my neighbor who is a trained dispatcher, right? The fact that we can, you know, perform actions on all these different points of data and things like that. And so that's why I think the hype isn't dying down, because more and more people are learning about it and learning about the fact that we can take actions on all these different data points. And then I don't think it's going to go away, I guess is my point, because as time goes by now, we're going to be able to ingest more points of data and act on those points of data faster. And I don't know if our capabilities to do machine learning and AI are going to go away anytime soon. The hype around it will probably start to wean off once it just becomes expected. But you know, I understand why we're not there yet, because more and more people are sort of getting hip to the concept.
And if we go back, we can look at stories about products that we wrote. I noticed that really just started right around last September, October. There was from Microsoft Ignite last year, there was a big bump then. And now we look at the number of products that we've written about that have some sort of machine learning or next generation, you know, analytics or whatever you want to call it. It's a lot of them. It's almost every single new product story we're writing mentions that. So, which actually is a good question. Just considering the wide trends in the space, like I'm assuming that VMware will talk something about that in their products. I mean, they have to. Everyone, it's the trend of 2017.
I mean, Citrix did it, right?
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. I think you have to keep in mind when we last talked about this, we were talking about when is the trough of disillusionment going to, when is that phase of the hype cycle going to arrive? And I think of it this way, and I don't know if there's any parallels we can draw to any other new concepts that have gone through the hype cycle or not. But a lot of the talk we have for machine learning and AI and stuff comes from the security side. And we have to keep in mind here is it's not just these companies that we talk about that have these capabilities. It's the bad guys too. And so they're the virus creators, the malware creators, the hackers, all of these people have machine learning and AI as tools in their tool belt as well. And so I don't know if there's ever going to be a trough in there where people don't care about it anymore. I could see this ascending. I could see the hype around it ascending, like whose AI is better, whose ML is better, for quite some time, because everybody has access to it now.
And so that will surely be a topic of a conversation at VMworld. So that's one of the things that I'll be watching out for. But going into VMworld, what else is on your question list, or what we need to figure out? So you wrote last week about we need to hear more about what they're doing for unified endpoint management and what else is going to be in there. And as I mentioned, they gave some hints on Twitter back at us that, hey, we'll have stuff to talk about. But what questions do you want to have answered at VMworld?
Well, okay. So one thing that you and I talked about was I just want to see what their progress is on Horizon Cloud on Azure, which they announced right around Citrix Synergy. They usually have every other year now, I think they've had a nice Synergy Thunder Stealer of an announcement, and that was this year's, was that they're going to put their stuff on Azure, which I don't know if we talked about this or not. So after VMworld last year, I think it was maybe January, or was it October? Either way, they announced that AWS was going to be their go-to public cloud partner. And so we all thought, okay, that makes sense, you know, banded together and fight against Microsoft. VMware is not going to do their own public cloud stuff anymore because that's not, you know, they've decided they don't want to be a public cloud company. It makes sense for them to partner with AWS. VMware has all this cross cloud architecture stuff they're working on. Totally makes sense. I wondered at the time whether or not this would mean that desktop workloads would be in AWS. And the information I got back from VMware was that this would not be the case. Because desktop virtualization was more tied to features of the hypervisor, and it wasn't like we were running vSphere in AWS. We were running AWS, or Xen, basically, on AWS. And so there were just a lot more kinks to work out before they could put desktop workloads in there. You could put your brokers in a different cloud, but you couldn't put your actual desktop workloads there. Then that was the story that we stuck with from January until May. And in May is when VMware announced that they were going to put Horizon Cloud desktops on Azure, which is quite a bit different than what the messaging was just 4 or 5 months earlier than that. And if there is anything to take away now that we are into the eighth month of 2017, is that this is without a doubt the year of Azure. If Azure is kicking so much ass that they got VMware to hop on board, that's saying something. And so I don't know how far along in the process they were with getting Horizon Cloud to work on Azure when they made the announcement. But several months have passed now. And by the time we get to VMworld, I expect to see something. I don't expect them to release it. I'd be surprised if they did. But I expect to see something showing Horizon Cloud working on Azure. The other thing, before I forget, and this is not in our notes, and it just kind of popped in my head before as we were talking about the ML machine learning and stuff, is that, you know, we've got all this from a security perspective in the world. There's another hot topic going on, and that's the secure browsers. And Citrix has their secure browser service. I just wrote for this past Monday about Ericom's Shield product. That's also a secure browser platform.
Symantec made another acquisition related to that that we'll have to check out as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested to see what VMware does in this. If they care, they certainly have the capabilities to put something together like this. So it will be interesting to see if they have a secure browser angle at VMworld this year.
And that's one of those notches where you know, for like a year or two now, we've been saying, hey, VMware's product roadmap is to do a bunch of stuff that Citrix has. Is there, you know, in particular with related to that, are there any other big checkboxes that you want to see?
No, I mean, so if you... I think Skype for Business Support is still in tech preview. It may have been released. My memory's a bit fuzzy. Either way, I'm sure that will be on display at VMworld. That was the last big feature, I think, between the two platforms that VMware needed to have to check the box, at least in the feature comparison. If you go through them now at that high level and just look at the list of features and compare, you get through the vast majority of them. And, you know, they're pretty equal on both sides. There are protocol wars and things like that that people can have if they want to. I'm kind of over that now. I mean, there are use cases for each that, you know, niche kind of use cases where one protocol performs better than another. I will say I'm hopeful that we'll see some Blast Extreme comparisons between Blast Extreme and HDX, because VMware made some pretty stout claims that Blast Extreme outperformed HDX and even their own PC over IP or Teradici's PC over IP protocol that VMware also uses. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that front. But really, in terms of desktop virtualization features, we're getting down into the really nuanced kind of things these days, the things that don't make keynotes. So, you know, VMware, I expect them to say, hey, we're really focused on this. You know, here's what we can do. Here's Blast Extreme. Here's Horizon Cloud on Azure. And here's Skype for Business Support. I don't know if they can shatter the earth with any other announcements in that regard. So we'll have to see what happens there. I could be wrong. I would love to be wrong. but we'll have to see. I think it'll be pretty much limited to that. And then we'll, you know, the bulk of the EUC focus, I think, is going to be on UEM and Workspace ONE, things like that.
Exactly. Because even on the, just on the enterprise mobility management side, there aren't too many, with one exception, there aren't really any big features that I'm wondering, like, hey, are we going to get this AirWatch feature that announced or anything like that? The one exception is support for the Microsoft Intune Graph API. They still haven't talked publicly. I think they mentioned it in a blog post once. I'll have to look that up. And this has to do with how they integrate with Office 365 to be able to manage some of the security features and configuration features within the Office 365 mobile applications. So that's one thing I'll be looking for. And so beyond that, really, it's just the general feeling, because as we probably mentioned last year, so there's no more AirWatch Connect. And AirWatch Connect was a great show, because where else could you get 1,000 people that were completely dedicated just to enterprise mobility management? And it was probably the largest collection of people in this niche that you could find. So what's going to happen to that?
And now you're 1/10 of VMworld, or whatever. You're 5% of VMworld, actually.
Yes. So
welcome to my world, man.
So we've... I've started to look through the session catalog, and really I have to see if I can find last year's AirWatch Connect session catalog and do a side by side and see how much is in there. But last year we had at AirWatch Connect, you'd have things like they were talking about wearables and IoT, and like have a demonstration of like smart glasses that like really put things together, like what you can do with sort of next level mobility. And I'm hoping that's in there at VMworld somewhere. And if it,
I hope that they put that all that stuff in one area, as opposed, because you know you could miss that if you're walking by, if it's sandwiched in between two booths that do virtualized cloud backups or something.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, though, is there's a new mobility event. So there used to be an event called the CTIA show that sort of fizzled out. But now the organization that puts on Mobile World Congress, like the huge 80,000-person conference in Barcelona every year, there's a Mobile World Congress Americas happening in San Francisco later this fall. And so AirWatch always used to have a huge presence at Mobile World Congress. In fact, sometimes they even branded it as like a mini AirWatch Connect embedded within Mobile World Congress. So I'm sure VMware will have a big Workspace ONE and AirWatch presence at this event here in San Francisco later on in the fall. So that'll be another outlet for both VMware and also a lot of the ecosystem to have a geeky mobility show here in the US. So I have high hopes for that show.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. I guess we're really curious to see what happens, how they merge AirWatch Connect into VMworld. I understand them doing that, but yeah, hopefully they can. So with the EUC business unit within VMware, that kind of grew up from within VMware. And so I understand how that just became a part of VMworld and not a separate wing of it or anything like that. But since AirWatch was acquired and it had its own conference ahead of time, maybe they'll find a way to put them on an island or something like that, just to keep it a little bit more focused.
Yeah.
Kind of like a separate track altogether. So we'll see what happens.
And on an island, we mean that in a good way.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll be at VMworld in, what is that, 4 weeks from today, or 4 weeks, just about, depending on when you're listening to the show. But it's coming up soon, and we'll both be there all week. The interesting thing is that VMworld is also the exact same time and same city, Las Vegas, as Okta Octane, which Octane always brings together a lot of those, very IT 3.0 companies, things like Box and other like very, very, very new, very San Francisco IT style companies. So that'll be a good show to go to as well. So I'll try to get an afternoon over there during the week. And then...
Yeah, have fun there.
Then this Microsoft,
we're always so busy. I'm glad you get away. You actually get to go outside. You're a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Let's see what else here. We're coming up on an hour, it looks like. Anything else about VMworld?
No, I was just thinking then beyond that we'll have Microsoft Ignite. I think neither of us are planning on actually going. We'll cover that from afar. It sounds like that one
is always over my daughter's birthday, so you can pretty much guarantee that I will not be to an Ignite for the next, 10 years.
And it's also the level of hugeness of just so many people that it's just too big of a conference, and we kind of just want to cover it from afar just to stay sane.
What was the recent Microsoft show called?
Oh, so
not
that
Ignite.
That was Inspire, the partner
Inspire.
Show.
Inspire.
Yeah, Microsoft has been this year. And same thing with Dell World on the VMware side. We've been getting these round of shows that haven't been on our radar, and then suddenly we'll notice that all of a sudden there were a bunch of important announcements coming out of them.
Yeah, that one We had no business going to that. It really didn't belong on our radar at all. But then now that 2017 is the year of Azure, there was a whole bunch of announcements that all of a sudden matter to us. And there are, you know, vendors that like Nerdio, you know, the IT as a service vendor that they build managed services around DAS that were there. And so it that may be a show that we need to at least cover from afar, but actually like set aside time to cover it, you know, next year, or maybe, you know, we end up starting to go to that show. It just depends on how it evolves, you know, over the next year or so.
Exactly. So I think we can wrap up today though with a, why don't we wrap up with a plug for Geek Out 365. We spent a lot of time in June and July very hard at work at this show and this new website. And of course, for as hard as me and you were at work, of course, our Tech Target colleagues that were actually building the thing were even much more hard at work. So that's been I've been really excited to see that launched. So for those of you who are listening, I haven't watched all of the new sessions yet, but I have watched several of them, and there's some good stuff in there. So please check it out.
Yeah, that was our goal. And the product development team at TechTarget, these poor people, like when this process started, we made a demo in PowerPoint because, you know, that's how we roll. And we then presented it to the product development team. And we're basically like, can you guys make this? And so they had to take what we could do anything we wanted to. It was a PowerPoint demo, you know? And so we handed them that and they went out to see what of that was capable, you know, within their capabilities and within the capabilities of our video hosting platform and things like that. And so they did a very good job. I mean, they hit almost all the features that we were trying to get, and what they couldn't get, you know, has made it onto the list for the next version and or future versions. And so I'm really happy with the way it turned out. I really wish that this was like a video podcast right now so we could have up a screenshot or something of it. But instead of that, just go to geekout365.com. You can also just, it's up in the top header of brianmadden.com. And in there, you'll see 400 hours. This is the bulk of the work. 400 sessions from all the past Bri forms going back to, I think, 2012. Jack and I, the bulk of the work we did was going back to every single one of those videos and tagging them with what they were about, who the speakers were, all of that stuff, which makes them very searchable and sortable in the new Geek Out 365 platform. And so there are, that's probably about 600 hours, maybe 500 hours worth of content from past Bri forms. And plus we had, you know, six, I think, new sessions this year with the release, and then we always want more. And so Jack and I have ideas for some new sessions. We've got a couple coming in from Mike Nelson, and some other people have voiced some interest too in submitting stuff for it. And so if you're listening to this and you think you've got something you want to share with the world, a half an hour video recorded with QuickTime or Camtasia or something like that is what we're asking for. And we want to keep it, you know, expert level content. And if you've got some niche that you're in that you think it might benefit other people that are also operating in the same niche you are, by all means, we want to see that. We want to share it. We want to help that out or get that out in the world to help the community. Geek Out 365 is the site that Jack and I would want to visit if there was a video repository. And so that's why we created it. That's the kind of content we want in there. It's free for everybody to get into and use. It's supported by sponsors, but not in an overbearing kind of way. And so we are, and even the sponsors are contributing technical content to this as well. So it's we're trying to keep that element of Bri Forum alive in Geek Out 365. And I think so far we've done a pretty good job.
Absolutely. Well, Gabe, this has been a pleasure. And so thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sure we'll be back with our next podcast from sometime at VMworld as usual. So watch out for that if you like the podcast. And as always, we'll see you on the site and on Twitter every day.
Sounds good. See you later.